Good morning. Very good to see you all out. The weather's warming up a little bit. It's very exciting. I'm defrosting a little bit. And I'm excited to talk to you more about meditation. That is the theme that I've been trying to preach on over the past couple of months. And so every second Sunday, me bringing to you a lesson about meditation. Our base text comes from the end of what David says in Psalm 19. He tells us in verse 14, "May the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, my rock and my redeemer." And so we've been trying to work through this verse very slowly, trying to encapsulate all that David has to bring to us from those rich words. Last month, we talked about the words that we speak, and today we're going to be talking about our hearts. Now, God has given us, like, the heart, the normal muscle, four-chambered, that actually keeps us alive. But when we're talking about the heart in the biblical sense, it's like all of our inner life. And so this morning, we're going to be thinking about, how do I keep my inner life healthy? How do I speak to it and guide it to the Lord? And so I want to use two examples, one of them coming from the Old Testament, one from the New Testament, to hopefully help us to keep speaking to our hearts and bring us closer to the Lord. You want to turn to 1 Samuel. We're going to start in chapter 1. 1 Samuel chapter 1. It says, "There was a certain man of Ramathaim Sophim, of the hill country of Ephraim, whose name was Elkanah, the son of Jeroham, the son of Elihu, the son of Tohu, the son of Zuph, an Ephrathite. He had two wives. The name was one. Name of one was Hannah, and the name of the other, Peninnah. And Peninnah had children, but Hannah had no children. Now this man used to go up year by year from his city to worship and to sacrifice the Lord of hosts at Shiloh, where the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, were priests of the Lord. On the day when Elkanah sacrificed, he would give portions to Peninnah his wife and to all her sons and daughters. But to Hannah he gave a double portion because he loved her, though the Lord had closed her womb. And her rival used to provoke her grievously to irritate her because the Lord had closed her womb. So it went on year by year. As often as she went up to the house of the Lord, she would use to provoke her. Therefore Hannah wept and would not eat. And Elkanah, her husband, said to her, 'Hannah, why do you weep? And why do you not eat? And why is your heart sad? Am I not more to you than 10 sons? After they had eaten and drunk in Shiloh, Hannah rose. Now Eli the priest was sitting on the seat beside the doorpost of the temple of the Lord. She was deeply distressed and prayed to the Lord and wept bitterly. And she vowed a vow and said, 'O Lord of hosts, if you will indeed look on the affliction of your servant and remember me, and not forget your servant, but will give your servant a son, then I will give him to the Lord all the days of his life, and no razor shall touch his head.' And she continued praying before the Lord. Eli observed her mouth. Hannah was speaking in her heart. Only her lips moved, and her voice was not heard. Therefore, Eli took her to be a drunken woman." So as we open up in these first 13 verses that we read, we are introduced at the end of the period of the judges, a time that is known for its rebellion and chaos because everyone was doing what was right in their own eyes. It's a horrible time to live. And we come out on the end of that situation with a man who is adding on to that chaos by violating what God has said about marriage and having two wives. And in this case, we have one he loves and one he loves a little bit less, but she has all the children. And so we are introduced to a woman who is in a very frustrating, intense situation. And what is kind of gets repeated through this is she is unheard by everyone else in her life. The other person who is in this marriage with her, Peninnah, has all these children that she's been blessed with. And she, instead of rejoicing over what God has blessed her with, decides to bully the person who is struggling with her infertility. That's a horrible position to be in. Hannah's been praying for this, we don't know for how long, for a while, pleading with the Lord for a son. And then the person who's supposed to love her and care for her, who gives the double portion to the Lord for her, still, when it gets to this and she stops eating and she's crying over this, his response is, "Why are you acting like this? Am I not worth more than that?" She is unheard. And then she's going and crying out to the Lord. So the only place when you can go when you're really feeling this type of unheard is to go to the Lord and bring all of that bitterness and all that frustration. She says, God, if you do this, I will give him to you. But again, sometimes that feels like it's unheard too. Now, one person who does hear her, who is going to comment in a little bit, we see Eli is there, and he observes what Hannah is doing. In verse 13, it specifically says that Hannah was speaking in her heart, which is what we're talking about this morning. How do I guide my heart? Whenever I am frustrated and bitter, what do I need to do? Speak to my heart. Speak to the Lord through it. One of the things I really appreciate about this and what I would encourage is that whenever you are praying, I'm sure there's lots of times where you're praying in your own mind, but prayer is not just neurons firing. It's not this intellectual thing. It is a relational thing. And so as she is praying, not out loud, she is still involving all of her body in this. Her tongue and her lips are still moving. It reminds me of earlier what's said in Psalm 19, where it tells us that the earth, you don't hear its voice, but it's still speaking because it's drawing your eyes up to the Creator. That is what prayer is supposed to do. So even if you look a little silly and Eli might come and say, why are you looking drunk? You should probably still do that to vocalize these things, even if your voice is not heard. Now we're going to pick up with Eli's thoughts in verse 14 and how he changes his mind going through the end of the chapter. It says, and Eli said to her, how long will you go on being drunk? Put your wine away from you. But Hannah answered, no, my Lord, I am a woman troubled in spirit. I have drunk neither wine nor strong drink, but I have been pouring out my soul before the Lord. Do not regard your servant as a worthless woman, for all along I have been speaking out of my great anxiety and vexation. Then Eli answered, go in peace, and the God of Israel grant your petition that you have made to him. And she said, let your servant find favor in your eyes. Then the woman went her way and ate, and her face was no longer sad. They rose early in the morning and worshiped before the Lord, and then they went back to their house at Ramah. And Elkanah knew Hannah his wife, and the Lord remembered her. And in due time Hannah conceived and bore a son, and she called his name Samuel. For she said, I have asked for him from the Lord. The man Elkanah and all his house went up to offer to the Lord the yearly sacrifice and to pay his vow. But Hannah did not go up, for she said to her husband, as soon as the child is weaned, I will bring him so that he may appear in the presence of the Lord and dwell there forever. Elkanah, her husband, said to her, do what seems best to you. Wait until you have weaned him. Only may the Lord establish his word. So the woman remained and nursed her son until she weaned him. And when she had weaned him, she took him up with her, along with a three-year-old bull, an ephah of flour, and a skin of wine. And she brought him to the house of the Lord at Shiloh. And the child was young. They slaughtered the bull and brought the child to Eli. And she said, oh, my Lord, as you live, my Lord, I am a woman who was standing here in your presence praying to the Lord for this child I have prayed. And the Lord has granted me my petition that I made to him. Therefore, I have lent him to the Lord. As long as he lives, he is lent to the Lord. And he worshiped the Lord there. So Eli's response is he does what a priest is supposed to do. Guide the people of Israel away from their folly and their silliness back on the way. But Hannah tells him, like, hey, I'm not drunk. Instead, the only thing that has been poured out is my soul before God. I am vexed. I am bitter. I appreciate Hannah's honesty of, like, this is a frustrating situation. And the only person who can help me feels like maybe I'm not heard by them. Eli blesses her and tells her, may God grant your petition. And from that point, Hannah is able to go away joyful. And I don't think that means that the pain of all these years of unfulfillment when it came to her fertility, I don't think that means it all went away, but at least she'd been heard by someone. And so when she has her child, she names him precisely that. Samuel means God has heard. All the years of struggle, all the times I was bullied and overlooked, maybe not favored by my husband, God has heard. And so when we receive what we have asked for from God, what is our attitude? I think we learned so much from Hannah in this. Because clearly she has gratitude and generosity. When Hannah has her child, she has already promised, I am going to give this child to the Lord forever. And not only that, but she brings a young bull, which would be very valuable. She brings lots of flour. She brings a skin of wine. All these things demonstrate not only am I giving to God all that he has given to me, but beyond. And then the things that happens to us is when we ask God for that thing, sometimes we respond generously, but other times we cling on to it with white knuckles. That God, I will not relinquish this thing that you have given to me, but I think that this is what has given me my strength now or my hope now. Hannah is willing to give it away because the Lord has given her what she has asked for. So we maybe learn to be generous and grateful for the things that God gives. Now, as this section concludes, as we think about how our hearts are supposed to be drawn into the Lord, Hannah's prayer tells a lot about her mindset and her attitude as she has given her son over to the Lord. So if you want to read her song with me, this is 1 Samuel chapter 2, verses 1 through 11. It says, "And Hannah prayed and said, 'My heart exalts in the Lord. My horn is exalted in the Lord. My mouth derides my enemies because I rejoice in your salvation. There is none holy like the Lord, for there is none beside you. There is no rock like our God. Talk no more so very proudly. Let not arrogance come from your mouth, for the Lord is a God of knowledge, and by him actions are weighed. The bows of the mighty are broken, but the feeble put on strength. Those who are full have hired themselves out for bread, but those who are hungry have ceased to hunger. The barren has borne 7, but she who has many children is forlorn. The Lord kills and brings to life. He brings down to Sheol and he raises up. The Lord makes poor and makes rich. He brings low and he exalts. He raises up the poor from the dust. He lifts the needy from the ash heap and he makes them to sit with princes and to inherit a seat of honor. For the pillars of the earth are the Lord's, and on them he has set the world. He will guard the feet of his faithful ones, but the wicked shall be cut off in darkness. For not by might shall a man prevail. The adversaries of the Lord shall be broken to pieces. Against them he will thunder in heaven. The Lord will judge the ends of the earth. He will give strength to his king and exalt the horn of his anointed.' Then Elkanah went home to Ramah, and the boy was ministering to the Lord in the presence of Eli, the priest." Hannah's first line of her prayer begins that her heart exults or rejoices in God. That as she has been speaking in prayer, it has been constantly saying that I'm going to take joy from God, even through my struggle and in my bitterness. And even if I don't understand the direction he's guiding me, I will rejoice. And he keeps speaking to my heart that it will do that. And then we see the reasons why she has trusted in God through all of the struggles she's had. She knows that God is the place her strength has come from. The reason I am able to have this power and this strength is because God is the place of my salvation. As you go through the rest of Hannah's song, she emphasizes a very important biblical motif. And that is that those who are high, who have elevated themselves, will be brought low. And those who are low will be brought high. It's a very important theme as you go through the scripture. And so she emphasizes that no one is like God. No other God that they worship. Because the other gods that you would worship, they do the same thing. They want to elevate those who are already high. And then you look at other humans. Humans like the winners too. Is always a chase for who is the best at this, who gets the gold medal in this, who is able to do the best, who has the biggest paycheck, all those things. We want to be high. And what the scripture keeps emphasizing is it's those that are low. I don't think we like reading this that much because then it tells us that we have to do things like we have to be needy and we have to be hungry. In order for us to truly understand what it's like to need the Lord, to trust in him, and to be favored by him. It takes a lot of faith. And so as we get to verse 9, she continues to talk about this. She says that he is going to guard the feet of the faithful, but the one who is wicked is cut off. Justice comes and tells us that it's not by might shall man prevail. if you are looking for strength, if your heart is looking for hope in a place that is not in the Lord, it's going to fail you. Trust in Him instead. And so she concludes that He is the judge of all the earth. He is going to weigh what is right. He has the knowledge. He has the power to do so. But also that He is going to give strength to His king, to His anointed one. He's going to raise him up. Now, in the context of 1 Samuel, naturally, we're pointing to David, the king. But as we look further in history, we talk about David's son, the greatest of David's sons, the Messiah. And that Messiah, Jesus, has quite a bit to say to our heart. So one last passage I want us to turn to is over in Luke chapter 24. Luke chapter 24. Naturally, being so late in a gospel means that we are talking about Jesus after His resurrection. That the Lord of the universe was crucified, was dead for 3 days, and was risen from the dead. That means an entirely new world of possibilities. That the light has shined in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. It is the first day of a brand new world. Incredible new beginning. We're going to pick up in verse 13. As Jesus is going to join some disciples as they make their walk home. He says, that very day, two of them were going to a village named Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem, and they were talking with each other about all these things that had happened. While they were talking and discussing together, Jesus drew himself near and went with them, but their eyes were kept from recognizing him. And he said to them, what is this conversation that you're holding with each other as you walk? And they stood still, looking sad. Then one of them, named Cleopas, answered him, are you the only visitor to Jerusalem who does not know the things that have happened in these days? And he said to them, what things? And they said to him, concerning Jesus of Nazareth, a man who was a prophet, mighty in deed and word before God and all the people, and how our chief priests and rulers delivered him up to be condemned to death and crucified him. But we had hoped that he was the one to redeem Israel. Yes, and besides all this, it is now the third day since these things have happened. Moreover, some of the women of our company amazed us. They were at the tomb early in the morning, and when they did not find his body, they came back saying they had seen a vision of angels who said that he was alive. Some of those who were with us went to the tomb and found it just as the women had said, but him they did not see. And he said to them, O foolish ones and slow of heart to believe all that the prophets have spoken. Was it not necessary that the Christ should suffer these things and enter into his glory? And beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he interpreted them in all the scriptures, the things concerning himself. So Jesus, as he resurrects, like what if you resurrect from the dead, where is the place you're expecting to go? Maybe go and like talk smack to Pilate. You didn't actually kill me, man. Or talk to go show Rome like I'm the true king of the universe. Instead, what Jesus does is go to a bunch of disciples and normal people, and he walks, and he talks, and he eats. I think there's something to learn from that. So he goes, and he shows up on the road to Emmaus, and we have these two people who are walking down, and they are discussing the things that have happened. And this is one of the funniest Jesus stories to me, where he comes up and just acts like the most aloof person, like, I have no idea what's going on. And they have to explain things to him. Verse 16, it talks about how their eyes are kept from seeing him. There's so many questions surrounding this resurrection body that Jesus has. Is it simply that Jesus' like entire appearance had changed that much? Or was it their disbelief that kept them from seeing that this was their rabbi and their Lord? I have a lot of questions about that. Now, Jesus asks them the question about what are you guys talking about? And they're looking sad. And Cleopas speaks up and talks about his relationship with Jesus. He says that, you know, we had heard about this guy. We've talked with him. We believe he's a prophet. His name is Jesus of Nazareth. He did all these mighty things. And then what happened is he was delivered over and they crucified him. They killed him. And verse 21 talks about how this is what our hope was. We hoped he was going to redeem Israel. He was going to fix everything. He was going to set everything right. But, you know, it's been the third day. This morning, some of the women who were with us, some followers, they went and saw the tomb was empty. They told some others they went and saw the tomb was empty, but you know, what does that mean? And so Jesus says in verse 25, O foolish ones and slow of heart to believe all that the prophets have spoken. So this kind of indicates to me that Cleopas and Jesus are not strangers. They've known each other for a while. But he also calls them slow of heart. That as God, as Jesus had been with them for so long and trying to encourage them further, their hearts still struggled to understand, could this possibly be the way that the God of the universe is going to redeem all things? The redemption of Israel is supposed to come through the suffering of the Christ. Glory is supposed to come through this. They're slow of heart. I worry too that I can be quite slow of heart. Read a story this week where allegedly my country bombed a school in a foreign nation where a bunch of children died. It just breaks my heart. And you kind of, and then like the natural thing is like, God, how could you allow this to happen? And God, can you really turn something as tragic as that into glory? I am slow of heart to believe that. And then what I have to keep saying is, Jesus is risen from the dead. He has promised to restore all things and to redeem all things. And he was with all those children. I must believe that to be true. And so he tells us also in verse 26, was it not necessary that the Christ should suffer these things and enter into this his glory? And then from that point, Jesus teaches us, how do I read my Bible? How do I understand the words that God has given to us? He starts with Moses through the prophets. And he tells them what this means about himself. The words of this scripture are not Jesus. But what they do is teach us about Jesus, teach about his character and his nature, and what does it mean to be a disciple of his. I would love to sit there and hear this conversation about how Jesus taught Cleopas on the way. But even as we get to verse 28, and they're pretty much there, they still don't understand. They're still slow of heart. So let's keep reading. Verse 28. So they drew near to the village to which they were going, and he acted as if they were going further. But they urged him strongly, saying, stay with us, for it is toward evening, and the day is now far spent. So he went in to stay with them. And when he was at table with them, he took the bread and blessed and broke it and gave it to them. And their eyes were opened, and they recognized him, and he vanished from their sight. And they said to each other, did not our hearts burn within us? While he talked to us on the road, and while he opened to us the scriptures. And they rose that same hour and returned to Jerusalem. And they found the 11 and those who were with them gathered together, saying, the Lord has indeed risen indeed and has appeared to Simon. And they told what happened on the road and how he was known to them and the breaking of the bread. So they get to the village. Jesus acts like he's going to go a little bit longer, but they beg him, you know, probably want to hear more, want to understand more. They beg him to come. And so I hope that that teaches us a lot about hospitality. It's not supposed to be this begrudging thing. It is genuine love. I want you to be here. But additionally, whenever we're talking about Jesus, certainly I want him to be with me. And so he goes in to stay with them, and then they go to the table. And when he's at the table with them, he breaks the bread, he blesses it, and it's at that moment that their eyes are opened. I do not think this is a coincidence at all. That as you read through the Gospels, Jesus does a lot of sitting with people, and a lot of eating with people, and a lot of teaching in those moments. Something very familiar about this, nostalgic about this. But additionally, when Jesus leaves, he doesn't leave us alone. He leaves us, in one way, with a meal. A meal that when we partake of it, we are reminded of the brokenness of his body, of the sacrifice that he made, and the love that is poured out on us and towards the world. In that generosity, in that hospitality, they are reminded, oh, this is the Lord. Their eyes are opened, and then he disappears. Naturally, their response is to go back. But the section it talks about here, the verse naturally I'm sure you're drawn to, given our lesson, did not our hearts burn within us while he talked to us on the road? We aren't told exactly what it means for their heart to burn, but I think a little bit, especially when we think about our relationship with Jesus now, he does call us to repentance. He calls us to hard things. And so that's gonna cause some heat. But additionally, all the things that we're hoping for, to feel loved unconditionally, to feel like we are cared for, to feel like we are heard, all those things that we are looking for, Jesus provides them. Now our hearts can be led astray and find happiness and craving in all sorts of different places. We need to constantly be guiding our hearts and saying, he is the only one who can set our lives truly on fire. He is the only one who can truly fulfill the things that are broken within. And so that's the goal of prayer and study and meditation, is like, I want to come and know my Lord and follow in the way that he has called me to be. And that leads us into our application. So for those of you who are participating in meditation journal, the thing I would encourage you to do is to write out Jude 24 and 25. It's not two chapters, it's two verses. But it's a doxology that rejoices in God and rejoices in Jesus and elevates them. It's a really good passage. And so I'd encourage you to write it down and then every day speak it to yourself. Or you could add it to your prayer if that's something that's helped you. And then additionally, the other thing is that, hey, if you pray quietly to yourself during lunch, your lunch break or something like that, engage your whole body in it. And again, maybe people are going to look at you weird, but maybe that also will prompt them questions about why you're practicing this, why prayer is so important to you, all sorts of things like that. I encourage you to just get your whole body invested in how do I give myself over to the Lord. I think our martyr culture, particularly in America, has taught us that, you know, we, even if you get everything that you ever hope for and ever want, your heart's going to keep craving more. Your heart will never be satisfied. So the hope is that when you find Jesus, everything that you've been looking for is found in him. All the happiness, all the joy, all the forgiveness you can find in him. And so if you're looking for him, you're struggling to find him, you feel like you're not heard, whatever the case is, if there's a way we can help you to know your Lord this morning, please let them know. We'd love to help. With that, we'll lead our invitation song.